There we go. So, welcome to Create Your Bliss with Mika Annan. And today we have the wonderful opportunity to talk to Dr. Ellen Franklin of Accutonics. And I'm going to let you explain all that because it has a couple of names and it's a rather amazing place. I just came out here and it's a gorgeous place tucked away in phenomenal mountains in New Mexico. So, welcome, Ellen.
Welcome. Thank you for coming up here. It's an adventure to get up to our place, tucked away in the mountains of northern New Mexico. But it's a beautiful setting for us to really practice what we teach. And, you know, our institute, the Accutonics Institute of Integrative Medicine, trains healthcare practitioners in a system of vibrational sound healing that's rooted in oriental medicine, psychology, and science. We've been doing it for 20 years. And we're training people all over the world. We have about 50 teachers teaching in Japan and Taiwan and Brazil and Israel and Russia, and taking this work throughout the United States and Canada. And it's a system that draws on both ancient and indigenous wisdom, mm-hmm. Oriental medicine, you know, the very basic principles of Oriental medicine, because we're applying tuning forks to acupuncture points in the body, directly on the body, in the etheric field.
Oh, how wonderful.
And using sound vibration in many, many different ways to help people to really come to center, to rebalance, to reconnect, and to find that their own inner harmony so that they're able to be high-functioning individuals in the world that we're living in today. You know, and how, you know, to create optimal health. How do you create optimal health, balance, wellness? And we've created some of those tools and those techniques that foster that for people.
So what was the inspiration for doing this? It's a very innovative process, but it seems to come together so well and carry such wonderful energy with it.
So my partner, Donna Carey, is an acupuncturist. She was clinical dean at an acupuncture college in Seattle, Washington in the early 90s. And she was concerned about a number of things. One is patients that are critically ill and find the needles hard to tolerate.
Right.
She created 14 community health clinics for the students. She was clinical dean, so she was looking for opportunities for the acupuncture students to get their clinical hours, get their clinical practice time. And so Donna had a Ryan White HIV/AIDS grant, and sometimes AIDS patients at that time, they were so fragile that she really wanted some sort of alternative to using the needles. And there were two drivers for this. One was looking for something that was, you know, able to bring the same beneficial effects as Oriental medicine for patients. And also looking at the amount of waste that goes into the landfill. The clinic was seeing over 100,000 patients a year. Every time you put in a needle, you have the guide tube, you have the paper. And was there some alternative that could deliver the same beneficial impact as needles alone? And what she discovered in working with different sounds and different frequencies and relating to some life experiences that she'd had was that she really wanted to work with the planets and planetary frequencies because of their relationship to nature, you know, and their relationship to natural cycles. And, you know, anybody can make a tuning fork, but what was driving Donna was the idea of creating something that was more in alignment with the cycles of nature. And so what we work with tuning forks that are scientifically tuned to the Earth, Moon, Sun, and planets.
Wow.
And we also, within that system, and nature created this, we didn't create this. And, you know, what we discovered as we were working on the development of the tools was that when you combine sort of the earth tuning fork, what we call Om, which is 136.1 hertz. A lot of people will chant to that sound.
Right.
When you combine Om with another tuning fork, there's a natural progression that relates to music and relates therapeutically to how the tuning forks impact the physical body. So one example of this is the new moon fifth, which is an Om fork and the new moon fork. And I'll play some of these for you so you can actually hear them in a little while. But but when you combine like the Om and the new moon, that's a fifth in music.
Right.
And a fifth is a gateway or an opening. And the way it works therapeutically is that it helps to open and to release on those points which you apply the tuning forks to.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of what happened when Donna was clinical dean was there was a lot of research, a lot of case studies, a lot of investigation of different ways of manufacturing the tools that we work with. And she had the perfect laboratory as clinical dean. And so she also had hospital privileges at the leading trauma hospital in Seattle, Washington. And so we really, very early on, were working with medical doctors and nurses and acupuncturists and getting the system developed and the curriculum developed over a period of years. And we've been doing this now for almost 20 years.
But that's really exciting, and it's wonderful to have had that venue and to start out with dealing with the medical institution, because then you have a common language and,
right,
and more of a venue for it being accepted and integrated and looked at seriously as opposed to another.
We talk when we train students. I mean, primarily we're an educational institute, so we're training healthcare practitioners in our methodology, which is acutonics. And we talk about people not being armed and dangerous. You know, it's like anybody can pick up a tuning fork, you know, and say, oh, I'm going to put this on a point, or I'm going to put it on your head. And it's not, our bodies are more than 70% water. Sound travels four times faster in water than in air. And so the human body is a natural resonator.
Yes.
And so you have to really think about what is the impact of these tools when you're applying them to the body. And you really need to know what you're doing. And so our whole foundation of what we've done from the beginning is education, education, education. And we've developed a in-depth certification program that is almost 400 hours of training. And we have people all over the world who are studying the work because they really see the beneficial impact of this. And what's different in what we do from acupuncture by itself is that we're able to fine-tune the energetic that you're applying into the body. So, as I mentioned earlier, if you're trying to release or open, you know, you might use different intervals. And then the other thing is that each of the tuning forks that we work with, and this comes to my background, which is, I'm really very interested in archetypal psychology,
right.
Understanding the influence of the planets on human psychology and human physiology. And so looking at something like, I'll use an example that people easily understand, Mars and Venus.
Right.
You know, so here you have the perfect, you know, mythically, you have this love relationship between Mars and Venus from the Greco-Roman mythology. In musically, when you take their two frequencies, you have a fifth.
Uh-huh.
You have the dance between yin and yang, male and female, head and heart. You have the ancient medical correspondences and rulerships that apply to both of them. And so the level of depth that when you start looking at why we use a specific tool and how we can fine-tune the energetic that we're using therapeutically comes out of the narrative that the client provides you and some of the keynotes of what's going on for them psychologically or physiologically. And then we would, you know, craft an appropriate treatment based on that, based on, you know, a knowledge of Oriental medicine, a knowledge of archetype, a knowledge of points, and how you would apply the sound to the body physically.
So there's an assumption here then that we're a whole.
Absolutely.
And the whole is capable of being healthy. And however you're trying to treat a place in the wholeness that's not working, you have to, again, work with the whole.
Right.
Which is so different than most allopathic medicine, which is...
Well, we start with an assumption that everybody has the ability to be whole.
Yay.
Right?
Good assumption.
You know, so how do we help you? And one of the things that I really have a hard time with is when... And you see this a lot in, you know, alternative medicine, is people will say, oh, I'm a healer. Let me help you. And I really object to that, because ultimately the person who is the healer is the individual,
right,
who comes to meet you And for whatever reason they're coming to you at that point in time, or whatever they're seeking, they have the wisdom within their own body to become healthy and to become whole. We're facilitators. We're helping them on the journey. And I, you know, it's like, beautiful. I'm not a fixer. I don't want to fix you. What do you want? Where are you trying to get to in your own journey toward health and holism? When I did my doctoral research, I did it on self-care for care providers.
Oh, wonderful.
So I worked with a group of nurses and developed a protocol that uses a 10-point protocol. So I selected points and I selected tuning forks that we know are really excellent for addressing issues of stress or, you know, trauma. And what I was focused on was nurses who experience a very high level of stress or secondary traumatic stress, like post-traumatic stress from right. their work. And I did pre and post interviews, and I taught them the basic protocol, and they treated themselves for a month. And the results were profound.
Wow.
Because I put the tools into their hands. I taught them some basic techniques they could do for themselves. And then they agreed to do this protocol twice a week for a minimum of 15 minutes. And they talked about reduced anxiety, reduced stress, sleeping better, reduced pain. You know, and several of them talked about how the results were immediate. But
that's wonderful.
So from my perspective, the thing that is most critical is, of course, there's a place always you want to work with a practitioner. You want to work with somebody who's skilled and knowledgeable and understands the depth of what's going on with you. And many times when you go to an acupuncturist or a massage practitioner, a nurse practitioner, you're dealing with a diagnosis of some kind from the Western medical perspective.
Right.
So you have
right.
some kind of label that is attached to what's going on for you. And that's valid. All of those tests are valid. I mean, it's why we talk about what we do as integrative medicine. You want the best of the West, but then when you look at integrative care and you look at what does alternative medicine or integrative medicine have to offer me, then it's knowing what are the best tools for me to work with to help shift what's going on for me right now. So whether it's people aren't sleeping, people have digestive disorders, people are dealing with incredible amounts of stress in the world that we're living in, how can we help you to reset those patterns within yourself? Or how can one of our clinicians or practitioners work with you to help find or facilitate your path to health and holism?
That's a wonderful approach, and to really know that, because there's that complicated place, because part of, I think one of the symptoms in our culture, one of the underlying issues in our culture, is that we don't come together in, to become well. And so many traditional healing, not just methods, but also cultures are set up to have these events where everybody comes together and participates in an event that helps create that for everybody. And it's a communal or a social or an interhuman. Not I'm going to fix you, but how do we
work together
and move into a state of harmony as a unit?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, the idea of community is a major driver. You know, when you talk about finding your passion, for me, it's about building community among our students, and really looking at opportunities in which to give back and to help foster that in other parts of the world, as well as here in the United States. You know, and one of our senior faculty members is in the process of creating a not-for-profit called the WHO Project. And
uh-huh.
their whole vision is about taking tools, oriental medicine and sound, into areas of the world that are underserved, and actually training people there to be able to help support the local community after they've gone. So they're following sort of the barefoot acupuncture approach that was started in China many, many, you know, years ago. And they've been in Upper Mustang, Nepal. They did their first mission, and they treated over 150 people, and they trained the monks there to work with basic tools to be able to help people once they had
Wonderful.
Left the area. And so this idea of creating community, giving back, it's a big part of what drives Donna Carey and I in the running of the Acutonics Institute and in the classes that we teach and in the community that we try to foster.
Well, your community is very international. You were telling me about your teachers in Moscow, Japan,
yeah,
many languages.
Yeah, we have all of these people have come here to this very rural community in northern New Mexico to train with us, because only Donna and I certify people to teach our work. So it's a huge commitment. Someone will have gone through our entire certification program to become a practitioner, and then they feel called to teach. And so they do additional training to become certified to teach our work. And currently we have two men in Brazil who've built this incredible healing center in the mountains outside of Brazil.
Oh, wow.
That trained with us and actually had acutonics approved as an integrative healthcare modality in Brazil and accepted as a modality in Brazil. We've trained Izumi Masukawa from Japan, who's teaching all over Japan to huge groups of people and is a real champion of vegetarianism and living a balanced and living in balance and harmony. And she's written a number of books. She's come here and studied with us and trained to teach our work. And we have a teacher in Moscow who's an MD and an acupuncturist, and she's been here many times to study and to take this work back to her local community. Ling Chen, who recently, I think even right now, is teaching in Taiwan. She translated all of our teaching materials into Chinese and is teaching in Taiwan and Malaysia. And so our work's been translated into Spanish, Portuguese, Russian, Chinese.
You've got most of, and English, you've English, got most of the world, you know, in those languages.
And Hebrew, you know, we have someone teaching in Israel as well. So, you know, so for us, you know, we started as just two people, you know, with a vision of how do you shift things, you know, for others. And, you know, I left when I met Donna Carey, who founded the company initially, mm-hmm. and then started to work with her. I had my own health crisis, you know, and I was a corporate person. I worked for many, many years in corporate America, and it took its toll on my health. You know, as it often does, you know, senior leadership, traveling 60% of the time, and the stresses associated with that. And, you know, I was having a major health crisis when I, you know, sort of met Donna and had such a profound shift from sound and acupuncture that it changed my whole life. I mean, I started to work with her at that point, which is, you know, more than 20 years ago. She was looking at founding a school to train acupuncturists, and the sound was just sort of a dream that it might become part of what the training was. And then ultimately Donna went to become clinical dean at the school in Seattle. I took another corporate job, and then eventually the two of us started working together to build this company. And we, you know, we'd always, both of us, before we had even met, were drawn to New Mexico. We'd been here hiking and camping and loved the northern New Mexico, the mountains, the quiet, the stillness, the beauty of the landscape.
Yeah, it's quite an extraordinary place.
The winter that it rained, I think, 138 days in a row in Washington, where we were so out of there and started looking for property, felt like, you know, we could run our business anywhere, really. And what we've done is we've created something that stands as a model for what we teach. So if what we're teaching is about living in harmony and balance, we have a business located on 35 acres in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico, although some of my neighbors might object to my calling it the middle of nowhere.
No, we're proud that we're in the middle of nowhere.
and we model, you know, we grow sustainably. We grow year-round in a geodesic growing dome, grow extensively on the land. Donna's making wines and she's infusing them with sound. We're doing all kinds of experiments using sound in agricultural production. And so it's how do you bring a different vibratory energy into people's lives, into their hearts, into their minds, so that it's something that they can then model in their lives.
Well, and I think that that's really how we change it. It's not just by having a concept, but by actually living it and going through all those different pieces of the process. So it's quite inspiring. It's very beautiful here, and all the pieces come together and work. And I really like hearing in your story, Ellen, that you both had a dream and had many ways of getting here. I mean, you had other jobs to support it, to create some financial base and connections,
of course, yeah.
And that it's a process. And there's something really exciting as well about the process. You know, Saturn gets a bad rap about a lot of things.
Structure's so important.
I love Saturn because Saturn is where you make it happen.
Well, you know.
You bring it into the material world and it, you know.
Right. I think Saturn is so important. You know, Donna's a Jupiter, Donna's, you know, a Sag. So she's all about, you know, the big, big picture, the creativity. And she's a huge driver here for everything we've created, all of the art projects, the gardens, the land, and the innovative new product ideas are, you know, Donna's going to be the driver. I'm the Aquarian. I'm all about community. I want to see our community doing good in the world and doing, not that Donna doesn't, of course, we both do, but what it takes to build and to sustain and to create something and to hold that vision and to be, do it from a place of integrity and, yes, you know, and not be driven by greed and not be driven by, you know, some other...
Or fear.
Or fear, you know, and it's easy to find that place. It's easy to be in fear. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to make payroll this week, or...
How did this happen?
Or wait, you know, we're out, oh my God, how did we run out of product, you know, and you've got a huge order for someone who's teaching internationally, and it's like, oh, we're out of that? We're out of our primary product? You know, and so finding that balance where, you know, it's just as easy... You know, when you work for someone else, you're on, you know, it's so different than when you're running your own institute and you live here in northern New Mexico, so you know the challenges of finding staff, the challenges of sustaining and growing and holding to your path, holding to your integrity, holding to your vision.
And how do you exactly hold on to both of it and keep it happening? Yeah. And as we have these new visions, one of the really fascinating things to me has been that we're creating all that structure.
Right.
And so when you move into a corporation, you're moving into a huge pre-existing structure.
Right.
On many levels. And so as we're trying to undo all that and create a new reality, you're trying to make a structure that's flexible enough and strong enough, like the geodesic dome, you know, one of the Buckminster Fuller images, that's strong enough to be resilient, but flexible enough that it's not that's not built in resistance to other structures. It's trying to be organic.
That you're organic and you're modeling, you know, what your principles are in terms of what you teach. You're modeling a harmonic lifestyle. You're modeling, you know, something that resonates with what your values are and holding to those values and holding to those core principles and, you know, this belief that no one should be, you know, it's interesting and with all the fighting over, you know, managed health care and Obamacare and all of that, what's interesting to me is that the whole idea is that no one should be denied health care. No one who is seeking to find health and holism in their life should be denied an opportunity to seek alternative measures. And, you know, and it's only very recently that some insurance covers acupuncture.
Right.
You know, and so if the vision is really about, you know, if the vision is we want to reduce our healthcare costs and we want people to be able to step up and step into their own power and take responsibility for their own healthcare, you know, what are we doing to foster that as a country, as a culture, in our local small communities?
And where are we focusing on wellness?
Right.
Like, how do you stay healthy? What does that even mean? What does that feel like?
Right. And how much of it is dependent on the food we eat? You know, the fundamentals. Are we getting clean water? Are we getting food that isn't grown with chemicals? Are we able to get out and take a walk every day or at least three or four times a week?
Yeah.
Do we have clean air to breathe? And how much of the world doesn't have that?
Right.
You know, clean water, clean air, warmth, a warm bed to sleep in. I mean, all of these issues.
And enough safety that you sleep well.
Safety. Huge, huge when you look at what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
You know,
and so many different layers. Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's our responsibility, you know, is to really hold to the light, you know, and to not get to that place of darkness and despair, which when you see what's going on in the world would be easy.
Right.
And I see it a lot in younger people today who are on outrageous amounts of anti-anxiety meds and, you know, and don't know what the future holds for them because look at the world they've inherited.
Right.
And so for, you know, for me, it, what I feel as, you know, a woman in my, of a certain age, you know, it is that you really, we have a responsibility to help people find whatever it means for them to be at peace and to feel a sense of oneness or a sense of attunement or at-one-ment. You know, what does that mean? And it's different for everyone. It's not to think that you have one prescription or one way of being. No, we're all different. We all have different motivators, different things that make us feel healthy and safe. This fundamentals, of course, clean water, clean air, great food. You know, the perfect tuning forks, you know.
And one of the reason the show is called Create Your Bliss is it's not just follow it, but it's work.
It's work.
But it's work that is impassioning and enlivening. Yeah. And it's the thing that, you know, you would rather do than anything else.
There's no question. I mean, I left a very well-paying corporate life to live on a mountain in northern New Mexico. And most of my friends thought I'd lost my mind. You know, lots of international travel in my corporate years. Interestingly, that we've become this international company now.
That was the thread. I still have that thread. Yeah.
But you leave the security of that world to follow something that you know in your heart from your own personal experience can make a difference. And ultimately, the driver for me is, can we make a difference? And, you know, I remember when I was studying psychology years ago, and I wish I could remember the name of the book. I can't. But the profound message was, all it takes is one person to impact the life of a severely damaged child to change that child's life.
To change the entire
And their entire trajectory of their life. And I really think about that a lot, is this power that just, if each one of us just positively influenced the life of one other individual, how exponentially that could grow around the world.
Just amazing. And what if that was our daily intention? Today, right. I'd like to, in my normal interactions with people, have at least one positive effect on somebody.
Right.
Not win, not be on top of the heap, not make the most or have the most toys or, you know, be the best dragon with their hoard or...
I love that you said have the most. I worked at the toy industry for 20 years. You know, he who dies with the most toys wins, wasn't that right? You know? He, not she, really. Yeah.
And, you know, I work in IT, and it's really all about guys and their toys.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, and what about your life?
Yeah.
Who's there?
Mm-hmm. What's in your heart?
Right.
You know, it's we spend so much time in our minds. What does it mean to live a heart-centered life? And if we chose to live that way and to really find what brings us light, what brings us joy, what makes us laugh, you know, I mean, what
it fills us with awe. We're just like...
a sense of wonder, you know, all of those things. And that I think, you know... It's about finding that for yourself. You know, when we train people in the acutonic system, what are we talking about? We're talking about, what does it feel like to you to be healthy?
Right.
You know, what does a shift feel like? You know, what does peace feel like to you? And we have all these beautiful tools, and we can teach people how to use them, and we can teach them how to facilitate and support and assist their clients and patients. But ultimately, if we are going to be in that role as care providers, have we done our own work?
Right. Yes.
You know, have we done our own work to figure out what that feels like in ourselves? And so that we're not just, you know, prescribing another pill, prescribing, you know. And I, unfortunately, I think culturally still, you know, people want to be fixed. You know, and I, you know, sometimes they come because they want to be fixed. And I, you know, I feel my responsibility is to help you to find that within yourself.
Well, and I also think that that's a very interesting, there's a very interesting assumption to that, which is that we're not right or we're not okay to start with. And I know that it's one of the things the Dalai Lama's talked about, not understanding about Western culture.
Right.
It's like, this piece doesn't make any sense.
Right.
What do you mean?
Exactly.
People think they're not okay. How do you get there? So I think that's very, very important. And that for each one of us, it's different. I remember listening to Deepak Chopra, which finally, he was talking about whatever it is that Valium triggers in the mind, and mm-hmm. I can't remember, so I'm not going to say the wrong word, that it brings up what Valium is trying to do is the neurochemical that we do that when we're totally engaged in something.
Right.
Which I thought was really funny, because what Valium does to me is I turn into the eternal four-year-old. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? How does that work? You know, which they try and give it to you in the hospital. It's not what they want. Like, why are you using that saw to cut my foot instead of the other one? But I realized that for me, that's really my place of engagement. It's like, wow, how does this, what's going on? Like that passionate curiosity that's not so much about the answer as it is about the exploration and the question.
It's being in a place where you can explore and question and discover and find joy in the tiniest little thing. That, you know, we go walking in the woods and I'll find this pine cone that's this absolutely perfect spiral that is a total representation of the Fibonacci sequence. And I'm like, wow!
And it's just there.
And it's just there on the ground. But how do we find that, you know, in our lives, in this, you know, unfortunately, this culture where we're taught to want the perfect body or the, you know, and we see it over and over again. We're taught to want, you know, we want what our neighbors have, or we want always more, instead of finding within ourselves what gives us joy, what makes us laugh, what, you know, or even makes us silly like a four-year-old,
yeah,
you know, to
yeah.
find that capacity
that
within our, the play.
To engage life and play.
And play. I think one of the things I remember from years ago is heavy duty corporate life at this point, and someone just looked at me and said, Ellen, you've forgotten how to play. And I was stunned. You know, I just stopped and I really thought about it, and I thought, damn, you're right. You know, that when we lose our capacity for play, we're losing our capacity for joy, for laughter, for, you know, the simple things helping us to just find a place of, you know, and to find that place of balance when you're working 60, 70 hour weeks and you're on airplanes all the time and you're
trying to make deadlines.
Trying to make, yeah.
You know, quotas and.
Quotas and your teams are all fighting and, you know.
Yeah. What's.
Yeah.
It's an interesting process. So talk a little bit more. You've talked about Donna and the acupuncture part. So let's talk a little bit about the archetype. The planets, that deep, you know, what Hillman calls the veil of soul making, which I think is a big piece of what we're all doing here.
Oh, I love Hillman. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. You know, I think that what, for me, you know, archetypes represent something that we know on a deep soul level, right? Mm-hmm. And we see them and experience them all around us. And so when we're working with the planets, we're working with both ancient medical correspondences, the way medicine would have been practiced, you know, thousands of years ago. And we're working with an energetic. I think of an archetype as an energetic, as a mm-hmm. story, you know, and so often they're tied to myths. So we talked about Saturn, for example.
Right.
You know, if I'm working with Saturn, some of the things that Saturn rules from ancient medical correspondences are the skin and the ear and hearing. Mm. And there's many other medical correspondences, but it's also about structure and bones. And so if you're therapeutically working with somebody that has issues with structure, psychological issues with structure, or had an overly rigid father in mm-hmm. their lives, then we might be working with Saturn to help to find the right relationship. You know, or maybe it's someone who's rebelled against structure in their life
mm-hmm.
because of having that overly, you know,
structured
life and growing up that way. And so they need to come back into balance and to find that right relationship with structure. And so we might be working with an Om Saturn interval musically. So Saturn's representing the planet. Musically, the interval is representing, you know, specific quality and characteristics. And then there's the therapeutic qualities and the, you know, sort of the psychological therapeutic that relate to what Saturn represents. Venus is I use the example of Venus. Venus rules our Venus circulation.
Uh-huh.
You know, blood flow to the heart. Mars is blood flow away from the heart.
Oh, I didn't know that. So, arteries and veins, you know.
Yeah, so think
arteries,
you know,
and veins.
Right, arteries and veins. And then all of the different characters. And, you know, so the, again, ancient medical correspondences, right, the way medicine was practiced at one time. And then sort of the archetypal qualities and the mythic qualities that relate to each of the planets. And so that's sort of how I come to, when I was putting my protocol together for my dissertation, what I was looking at, because I was talking about archetype and archetypal qualities and would the nurses, you know, identify those. And so in my protocol, I used Chiron, which is one of the tuning forks that we have. And Chiron is the archetype of the wounded healer. And so I built that into my protocol along with Mars and Venus, because you're trying to balance issues around anger and stress and loss of heart, you know, when you're talking about traumatic stress. And so trying to balance between those things, Mars and Venus. I put the zodiac fork we use. Zodiac represents the Earth traveling through an entire zodiacal cycle, which is 25,900 years or 24,000 years, depending on whose cycle you're looking at. And if you think about something that takes that long to travel through the solar system and come back, so it's very dispersive. It breaks things up. So we might use it on scar tissue, or we might use it on points of pain or shoulder trauma. But it also gathers wisdom, you know, something that takes that long to go out through an entire cycle and then come back. And so, and musically, when combined with Om, the zodiac is a third, which is very meditative, very soothing. So at every, there's so many different layers to what we're doing with the sound and doing with the qualities of the archetypes that we're working with, and how those inform a treatment, the development of a treatment protocol. Because, you know, ultimately when people come to see you, there's a story, there's a narrative, and Donna will often talk about what's the blood root of that narrative. You know, what are they really saying to you, and what are the key themes that are emerging? So yeah, someone has a diagnosis, or they come in and they have hip pain or shoulder pain, but what else is going on?
Right. Where is the restriction?
How do you find freer movement? How do you ease flow for that person? And often, you know, without prompting, it comes out in the narrative when you check in with your patient before you do your protocol, and they'll come up with something. But, you know, we look at sort of, you know, we look at science, we look at the elements, we look at physics. We, you know, there's so many different components into the richness of what we've created in our system. And I think, you know, one of the things that I love about what we do is that, you know, Donna is she had a Western medical background. She was a med tech. She's a poet. She's an acupuncturist. You know, I come at it from sort of a corporate business and psychology and organizational. I did a master's in organizational development, and then I did my PhD in psychology. And so I'm coming at it more from a psycho-spiritual. And so we're combining this wealth of knowledge that we both had, and we're both science geeks. We love the sciences. So we're always looking at, you know, what's coming out in science? What supports what we're doing? Is there something new? And you start looking at physics, and you start looking at even the nature of sound and vibration, and that, you know, sound travels four times faster in water than in air. The human body is a natural resonator for sound. We know at a really simplistic level that many people will listen to hard driving rock music at the gym. Why? Because it helps them keep going. It propels them forward. It push. It's got that push driving beat. What do we listen to when we're trying to fall asleep? We listen to soft tempos. We listen to, you know, music that's soothing, that's able to settle our nervous system. You know, and so even if you just look at music and the types of music that you listen to and the influence that has on you physically, or think about being in a really busy city, right, and all the noise, the cacophony of horns, a jackhammer, what happens to your body? You get tense, you get irritable, you can't wait to get, I mean, especially when you're used to living on a mountain in the middle of nowhere, you can't wait to get away from the noise.
Yeah.
You know, so there's so many different levels at which, you know, we know that sound influences us both positively and negatively. And so if you can use sound and vibratory energy to promote health and holism, and know when you need to break up something that's stagnant, or know right. when you need to soothe or smooth. And the way you get there, and the way we approach the studying of the tools, is through knowing what the archetypal qualities are, knowing what the ancient medical correspondences are, and then understanding the body, the meridians, the points, the chakras. And we work a lot with the 8 extraordinary meridians, which are the primordial vessels that mm-hmm. develop the first. Mm-hmm. And they're often not taught in acupuncture school, but they are extraordinarily powerful for big shifts, big transformation. And that's a big piece of what the work that Donna's done and that Donna's brought into the system is working with these 8 extraordinary meridians and understanding the depth of what they do and the keynotes that they contain. Wow. So really getting in at a deep level, and then how you might layer sound and what kinds of sound progressions you might use. And, you know, in our system, we're working with tuning forks on and over points. We work with chimes. We work with essential oils that also have the imprint of that planetary energetic. And we, you know, these beautiful symphonic gongs that attune to the planets. And all of that is brought into a therapeutic setting. Donna actually had planetary gongs before the tuning forks, you know, cool. because she'd had a sensory life experience where she had heard the music of the spheres.
Oh, wow.
And really needed to figure out, how do I bring those sounds into my clinical practices and acupuncturist? What do I do? And so she started with a set of planetary gongs and worked with them and said, well, this isn't realistic for most people. You're not going to have 14 planetary gongs in your treatment space. So what is it that can bring these same sounds into a therapeutic setting that she knew were deeply transformational? And through her own work, when she later became clinical dean at the Acupuncture College in Seattle, it started to make sense for her that, okay, we can get these same frequencies in tuning forks. It's not going to have the same huge, same big sound envelope or resonant as a gong.
That affects your whole...
Right, but it's directed sound versus sound in the field.
Right.
So this combination of directed sound in the field, working with acupuncture points and chakras, and working both on the body and in the etheric field, very, very powerful.
I was going to ask about the gongs. They're so beautiful.
This is Mercury hanging communication. Here in my office.
Here
communication.
We are.
Let's see. I don't know. I don't really have the right mallet here, but mallets are everything, is what we tell our students.
Some of the other tools for you, but
this
happens to be the one sitting here.
It's beautiful.
Hanging here.
So I have a question too, as I'm looking at that, and it's gorgeous. So how do you make them? Where are they made?
They're made in Germany. They're every gong. I actually have I could show you that PowerPoint on
this.
Every gong is handcrafted in Germany.
Oh, wow.
And the company's been making them for 3 generations, and they're incredible. They make cymbals, gongs for symphony orchestras, and then these planetary gongs. And Donna had one of the first sets of planetary gongs
they're
that they created.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
And they're very, the sound is just extraordinary. And we've actually developed the frequencies for some of the gongs that we have for Chiron.
Because you said you have 14 of them.
At least, yeah.
Wow.
I forget how many there are total, but all of the planets and then the moons and the sun and the earth, there's 3 cycles of earth. So we have Earth in the 24-hour day, which is, we call it our shot of coffee. Earth in the 4 seasons, which is what most people know as Om. And then Earth in the 25,000-year cycle.
Mm, nice.
And so they have very different sounds and very different therapeutic qualities.
I love that whole 25,000-year cycle, because I have occasionally talked to spirit and said, okay, I'm right now in this life. Can I get the version that I'm supposed to be manifesting in the here and now? I get the big picture, but... Can I have the next step, please?
Oh, are we meant to know the next step? I don't know. I don't know. I think ultimately what we say, or what I say, is show up.
Yeah.
Show up every day with the intention of doing the very best you possibly can at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. And see where it takes you.
And see where it takes you. And live in your heart. And
do what you know is right in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an interesting process.
And it's lifelong.
Yes.
And there are, you know, it's like there are no easy answers. You know, it's where are we at this point in time, and how can we, you know, we say it's time, everybody, all hands on deck. We talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. We train students. It's about, we are living in a time that requires all hands on deck. And all of us to as you know, and it's my driver in building community, is how do you encourage people to have all hands on deck. One of the things that I loved about our community is when Alicia Villamarin, who's one of the mm-hmm. co-founders of the WOO Project, mm-hmm. was getting their first mission together, and you know, uh-huh. really, Alicia and Maria Romero, who's also an acupuncturist, both out of Florida, and they're trying. They have this vision, you know, of bringing health and holism to underserved communities around the globe. They both traveled extensively. Alicia's done all kinds of work with other organizations, Acupuncturists Without Borders and the Pan-African Project. And she's traveled a lot working with other organizations and really was driven to create her own, which we support mm-hmm. wholeheartedly. And I think what I saw in our own community was when she was going to do this first mission that everybody wanted to donate forks, tuning forks, mm. you know. And so people were like calling us and saying, hey, I want to make sure Alicia has what she needs, so can I get stuff for her, which was so incredible. And then seeing how, you know, even one of our students, one of our teachers actually, who's trying to finish her own certification, her you know, right. practitioner certification, wants to create a CD that can be sold and the proceeds could go toward the project. Nice. And so really, you know, people thinking about how do we further this vision of, you know, this member of our community who wants to give back, who has a vision to give back, and how do we as a community support that?
Beautiful.
You know, so we see that within our own community so much. And
so very much that whole communal support.
Support. And the idea, you know, trying to really hold the energy for our teaching community, our practitioner community, to really, you know, share and collaborate and to try and move, you know, as much as you, the me model, which I am so not a champion of. It doesn't work anymore.
It doesn't work.
Doesn't work anymore. It's about how do we foster the growth of the community to the benefit of all of us.
Yeah. And I think the fascinating thing about community is if you're really in that place, then people step into their role.
Right.
Like it's not a sign that people, by their interest, by their capability, by their focus, by what engages them. Yeah. I talked to a woman from Microsoft, and she said we did this really radical thing in a meeting. Because we went around in the meeting and said the task that happened during the meeting, instead of rotating them, we said, what if we ask people which of these they would like to do? She said it was really amazing because there are people who like taking notes in meetings. It works for them. There are people who like initiating, who like, you know, setting up the space. And she said what we did was we asked everybody what they would consider to be their contribution that would engage them in making this happen. She's a group of sales support people, high level, that come in and meet once a quarter. She said everything got delegated, but the difference in the meetings afterwards, because everything was done by somebody who wanted to be doing that.
Right.
And the quality of the meeting was totally different.
Yeah. You know, I think that,
because people came in with engagement.
Yeah. It's huge. And, you know, and I think as, you know, someone who's obviously in a leadership position, who's an educator, that, you know, my role is to help people find what works for them.
Yes.
You know, not everybody learns in the same way. Not everybody has the same, obviously has the same passion or has the same drivers or has the same motivators. And, you know, even as a, you know, someone leading large groups of people, you're always, when I was in corporate, always, as I matured and became a better manager, mm-hmm. what is it that excites people? What is it that, you know, there's always the stuff that has to get done, that just has to get done, right. that people don't often want to do. But how do you get people to see what most excites them and that they want to do their very best because it's something that they feel great about doing? You know, and to help people to to find that for themselves. You know, that is following your bliss. That right. is finding what brings you joy in the moment, in the reality of your life, whatever your life might be at this point in time.
And to make everything in your life better, all you have to do is go, well, what can motivate me in what I'm
right.
doing?
Right.
You know, maybe I don't want to be what I'm doing, but in this range, where can I find the place of flow?
Yeah.
Where can I find the place that does allow me to come alive?
Well, and I think that's the idea, is what is going to make me feel alive yeah. and whole. And, you know, and I mean, so many people are in jobs, and they're in the job because they have to pay the rent, and
right.
I totally understand and appreciate that on every single level. So if you're in a job that doesn't feed your soul, how can you feed your soul in other ways? You know, what can you find in your life that's going to feed your soul? And then over time, you do find the work that
and it leads you there.
Fills you, because it leads you there. I mean, I often wonder how I wound up in corporate America. You know, I was a theater major, an undergraduate, you know, and then I wound up writing recruitment ads for the Stop and Shop supermarket chain. And then I wound up working for Hasbro when it went from being a $100 million company to $1.4 billion in 4 or 5 years, you know, and being there at that time and being mentored and growing into my work. You know, I was very fortunate, and I realized how fortunate I was. And so, you know, throughout life, opportunities are there. And it's to not, I see this so often with young people now, is to not get stuck in believing that you can't get to where you want to go. Yeah. I actually believe that there is room for us to get there. And it's about being creative, and it's about not getting into that mindset of being stuck, or that you can't possibly get there, or that's only for other. You're not other.
And that you don't have to do it, and that there's not a set route to get there.
Right, never.
You know, that the way for you to get there is to take the next step.
Yeah.
And to not, and with engagement, with
yeah.
passion, because it'll take you amazing places, yeah. places that you can't imagine.
I mean, I laugh sometimes because I think about how my own passion, how you can talk your way into almost anything with passion, and then with the passion and then actually delivering. I mean, it's not
right,
just
right.
about the passion.
Right,
it's,
but then how do
but
you sustain?
You can,
right.
you can have that passion, and you can convince someone to give you a chance, but then it's about doing the really, really hard work once
right,
you get
then
there.
Showing up.
And showing up. And
finding
being
your passion
right.
in that, in
yeah.
the part of making it happen and
yeah.
staying engaged and going through all of the stuff that comes up. It's not all easy, and it's not all supposed to be. And sometimes the hard work is the most enjoyable part. You know, it's like we have this fear of work. At least I work in a place that people do, and it's like, really? That's cool. You know, it's like,
I don't know what I would do if I weren't working.
and it's very fulfilling,
yeah.
and it moves energy, and it does create that level of focus creates
yeah.
a harmony, and
yeah.
It's a very, very interesting process. But I love what you people have created here. The whole, because there is a people,
oh, right.
you know, like
right.
like most indigenous people call themselves "we the people."
Well, living adjacent to the Picorees and
yeah.
living up here on sacred land, I mean, you asked how we came here. We feel
yeah.
like we were called here.
Yeah.
You know, do white women called here? I don't know. You know?
Well, I wonder, because New Mexico does that.
You know, and we say in New Mexico that if you're meant to be here, you will be here for the long haul. And if you're not, the mountain spits you out really fast. And we've been here over 15 years now. And we so felt called here that
yeah.
this was an area of the world that we were meant to be, that we had important work to do here. And, you know, our students come from all over the world, but there's something about feeling like you're holding energy for a place and a space, and that you're doing your work in a place that you were called to do it. And it's hard to articulate that. I know that someone here told me that in the Hopi prophecy, they talk about this area being the gateway to the fifth world. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? I mean, and I think about our own work. We work with the power of the fifth all the time.
Right,
a fifth
right.
is a gateway, an opening. And have we really been called to run our institute in a place that is a gateway to the fifth world?
That is yeah, an opening.
And an opening. And certainly what we've seen in the last 20 years of doing this work is the growth and the awareness and the acceptance and the power of sound has been exponential.
One of the things I find really fascinating about the vitality of the energy here in northern New Mexico in the mountains and everything is that it calls people here, that it has work for them to do.
Oh, there is no question.
Know? It's like, hey, I need you, and we got a whole lifetime worth of...
Well, I don't share this very often, but when I met Donna the first time clinically, and uh-huh. you know, as an acupuncturist, she came out, she walked around her desk, she shook my hand, and see this big white light, and I hear this voice saying, "You have work to do in the world. It's about time you got here." And I almost never went back to see her because I was so freaked out. Like, what? Who just said that? Did you just say something?
Wait a minute. Wait. Why am I here?
I was so freaked out, I almost didn't go back. And yet I feel like what we do is a calling for both of us.
Yes,
you know,
no,
it's such
clear.
Such a calling, and that this is the work that we were asked to step up and do. And, you know, are there times when it's deeply challenging, you know, and frustrating and not without pain, not without struggle, ever. I mean, to think that you can get somewhere without, you know, a little bit of pain and a little bit of struggle, it's, I think you're fooling yourself. But to within that, to find the opportunity for laughter right, and the opportunity right. for joy. And they're like, oh, my God, we're out of a product or, you know, somebody... whatever says something really negative and you're like, you want to cry,
right,
but
right.
you can't, you know,
right.
you just
have to
hold energy, hold space. And yeah,
no, it's, and I think that that's also a really important thing to know is that, you know, all that part that, but when you look back and all that part in the process of doing it are those points of deep engagement. It's like, how do you get it to happen, you know, how do you keep it flowing? How do you, again, do the Saturn, construct it,
the structure,
shift it,
the shift,
structure, you know, and know that I really think that's what being incarnated is about.
Well, and to not be afraid of Pluto,
right.
which invites you to go deep, really, really deep, and to look at the dross, and to look at mm-hmm. the underbelly of things, and to not be afraid of what it might look like to be in that place, but to know that we can rise like the phoenix, we can rise out of it, we can truly, you know, find, you know, and I think all of these, you know, sort of archetypes or planets or myths, they all have a deep story to tell us about the ability and the power that we have within ourselves
right.
to transcend whatever this incarnation has gifted us with.
Right.
You know, and sometimes those gifts are really positive and sometimes those gifts are deep challenges, but we within ourselves have the ability to step up and to meet them and to work with them and to look at them as opportunities to help us grow and transform and be everything that we can be. And I think so much of what we see with sickness, with soul sickness, mm-hmm. with illness, it, and I think, you know, in the Inuit culture, they talk about this, that when you don't speak your truth,
right.
that you become ill.
Right.
And I think that that's true of all cultures, that when we don't find our truth, when we don't find our passion, when we don't speak it, when we bury it, when we hide it, then we invite illness. You know, we invite a level of dysfunction into our lives by not being able to step up and be honest and speak our truth.
And then I think people get habituated and use then the illness to keep themselves from moving forward. Yeah, and Pluto is, you know, Pluto's like dark matter, which is 98% of the
dark matter's
known
good.
Universe.
Can be good.
It's like, it's where it all comes from.
Well, figure out how to work with dark matter and live in the light. I mean,
right,
isn't that
right.
what we're all trying to do?
Yeah. And that they're not diametrically opposed, but it's the dance.
It's always.
The yin-yang.
Yeah.
It's the balance.
It's always about finding that balance between head and heart, yin and yang. When I was studying and reading a lot of Carl Jung, I remember Jung talking about how excuse me, it's never been, you know, we're one thing, that when we separate heart and mind, mm-hmm. they're not separate. They're one and the same, right. You know. And so and I see this culturally in all cultures. I see that we have this desire, and I certainly found it as a doctoral student, to talk about the difference. You see it in science. You see it in research all the time. We're always talking about the differences between rather than the similarities.
Right.
Right? So rather than talk about the fact that, you know, there's this split between mind, body, spirit, how could there possibly be a split between mind, body, and spirit and have us be functioning whole human beings?
Right.
And that was the point that Jung was making. He was talking about how they're always part of the same. It's what, you know, it's kind of like, what do we allow to be more dominant, or
right.
what do we allow to guide our lives? Like, we're always in our heads and we forget the capacity of our heart. But they're all one, you know,
they're all a part of us. They're all present.
They're all present all the time.
We're just not engaging
right.
them. Yeah. Or acknowledging that we're engaging them.
Right, exactly. So, yeah. you know, it's about how do we engage, right? How do we engage to fully so that we are on our path towards our passion, towards what gives us joy, towards what allows us, or what we allow to manifest as health and holism. It's different for everyone. I mean, there's no question that
it's different at different parts in your life.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And, you know, does it mean that someone might be pain-free who has chronic pain? No, but how they deal with the pain, how they address it, how they ameliorate it or lessen it, you know, and maybe they will become pain-free, too.
And how do they define themselves?
Right.
Are they a sufferer? Is that their identity?
Their identity and their label. I think we get stuck right. in their those place. Patterns of yeah. identity and label. And you know, and what I see a lot is people get stuck in their story, and
yeah.
they keep wanting that to be their story. They say...
Get invested. Right.
They become so invested in their story.
Right.
You know, what made them who they are today, or what trauma befell them, or... And you get stuck in that. And you just want to keep going back to the story, and that's why you are where you are. And I think our role when we work with sound, when we work with any of these modalities, when we coach people, when we're seeing people in a therapeutic setting, is to help them face their story
right.
and to recognize that it's only a story.
And you can rewrite it.
You can rewrite it. You can rewrite your story.
I had a really fascinating thing happen in a Feldenkrais, and it's partially, I think, about conceiving, but I was in a Feldenkrais class, and I just said to my body, let's move back to before, you know, this injury happened. And my body said, let's just go back to a state of health. Like, let's just go back and be whole before any... And I was like, okay,
I'm
on. How do
I'm
we
there.
Have
let's go.
Let's go. Wow, I hadn't even thought about that, but that's even better. Like, why piecemeal it?
Right, why
you
piecemeal
know, let's
it?
Let's go back to that place of wholeness and health and where it started and have that as the image that you hold of yourself.
Right. Right. What would it look like, right?
Yeah.
What does health look like to you? What does happiness look like?
Yeah. How do you feel in that place, you know? What would it feel like to be? And what would you do differently?
Right.
If you felt that way? I don't even know. That's about an hour, so maybe we should...
Go listen to some sounds
and... Because this is being touchy, I'm just going to take it with us.
No problem.
Without turning it off and back on, because I can edit that out as opposed to having it not start again. Oh, these are beautiful.
What we're working with here is what we have set up is we have all of the planetary gongs in these two rooms and a lot of the tuning forks. And...
Close this.
We were talking a lot about Mars and Venus, so I'll play Mars and Venus for you. This is Mars.
Wow. They were just conjunct.
Small but big size.
very big.
Really big. And we talked a little bit about Pluto, so.
Ah, here is Pluto. Oh, yeah, you can hear him. I'm sure the microphone. That buzz is the. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. It resonates all through the bones and the body.
Yeah, it really does. Let me put on an activator.
Okay.
I can actually hit the
So this is a little armband that she puts on to leg band to strike against to activate.
Activator on to activate the tuning forks on. Oh well. So you're gonna have to edit this out because.
Okay, that's all right. We can do that. It's not cooperating.
I have my own, and I don't know where. I should have just grabbed my own because this one is
not the right size. Yeah, she can edit this out.
There we go. Just, I don't want to be, you know, the sound of activating it is
sometimes louder than the
There we go.
Oh, cool.
We had talked about Mars and Venus. So this is Mars and Venus together, which in music is an approximate fifth. These are cosmic tunings. They're based on the Kepler's orbital velocities of the planets traveling around the sun. So they're scientifically derived.
I was going to ask that, yeah.
Those velocities were converted into hertz by Cousteau, a Swiss mathematician. Took the frequencies or the velocities of the planets traveling around the sun, the Lepto.
And converted them into sound. Oh, wow.
Converted them into hertz or musical tone. And when we're working with tuning forks, we work with three octaves or four, depending on the forks, but. This is mid-range of Mars and Venus, which we would use on the body. And then we also work with Mars and Venus in a lower octave. And it's just when you want to work more deeply.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So you might layer sound on a point, and you'd start maybe with the mid-range and then work with the low tuning forks. And you can feel the difference on your body.
Oh, yeah, they resonate very differently.
So
it's
the same frequency, it's the same interval, same frequency, but it's a deeper, it's one octave lower.
And so it's an octave lower, so it's more.
And then we also work with high frequency. So, you know, if you even think about the term, so we would work with, you know, we might begin a treatment with the mid-range tuning forks, and then sometimes you feel like you're just beginning to touch the edge of what you're getting at, and so you might work more deeply or lower.
To open it.
And then sometimes you just want to lift it out.
So
we would work
it
with
up.
The high frequency and we might work over the body or in the field with the high frequency.
So that's like the etheric or outside. The, so it moves, right. I could feel that. Whoa, I just got chills all over my body.
So working, she moves the, yeah, so we're working in the field with the fork. So that would be the next, you know, sort of the next thing. And the next level at which we work. And then, you know, each of the planets are represented by the forks. And then, as I mentioned, some of the tools that we've developed are Sedna, which was developed long after Kepler lived, of course.
Right,
was discovered long after Kepler. And so we developed the frequency for Sedna, and then Chiron, the archetype of the wounded healer, which I love.
And is Sedna another asteroid?
Sedna is actually a planet.
She's out, like Pluto.
Cloud.
Yes.
A trans-Plutonian.
Trans-Plutonian.
Then this is Chiron.
We're about to have a Sun Chiron conjunction. What's that?
Nibiru.
Nibiru.
The 12th, the planet of the crossing. It's quite controversial. I love it. So these are beautiful.
Yeah.
And then we also talked about Saturn. So let me
play Saturn.
Play Saturn for you.
Saturn and Pluto in the same rack.
Quality of the sound, the character, the underlying character and qualities. Sometimes you just lightly hit them, and they want to be heard. They get so loud and so vocal, and you know they're just amazing. I think of them as living beings.
Yes.
Really, really, I do. And then let's see what I have here.
What's this?
This is Stan's. This is the Earth Gong.
Ah, okay.
And the moon is here.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, yeah, listen.
Neptune, the two phases of the moon, and then my ruling planet.
Uranus, yeah. It's beautiful. So this room has four gongs hung underneath a beautiful arched window that they're, what, 2 to 3 feet in diameter?
Yeah, these are the small, like 24 right. inch in diameter or 30.
And they have a beautiful, in the center of each gong is a symbol of the planet that they represent. The gongs hang separately. They have racks with gongs and the colors. The forks are color-coded.
Right, the forks
by
are
planet.
Color-coded so that... or the chime. So if you're working with a chime or mm-hmm. a tuning fork, across the different octaves, you're going to find that. So this would be Venus,
which is pink.
And
oh, beautiful!
This is the chime for Venus.
Want me to hold it?
Mm-hmm. And then here's another Venus chime. So this would be an octave of Venus. Oops, that's not very loud.
No, but you can hear the difference.
Yeah. Mallets are everything, is what we tell people.
So there's a great deal of skill involved in picking which, not only which planet, but then which octave, which vehicle to deliver it.
This is why we have a whole certification program.
Which mallet you use yep. to create which level of sound.
Yeah.
That's Mars that we're hearing now. How fabulous.
Yeah, I have to photograph these later today.
So, and the chimes are used more...
The chimes would be used in the field. The chimes are actually higher than the high frequency.
Than the high frequency.
Because of the structure of the chime, mm-hmm. because of the tubular nature, they don't sound higher, but they actually are. But they'd be used in the field. Some people hang them in their treatment space. Some people use them for ritual or ceremony.
Oh, wow. They're beautiful.
Meditation. And everything that we do is in alignment with one of the frequencies of the planet. So, you know, we're always working with the cycles of nature. We're working with the archetype. We're working with the mythic qualities. We're working with new moon and full moon. Think about... You know, what do we do when we have a new moon ceremony? It's about initiation, about beginning something. Full moon is about the yin of the yin. It's about, you know, the water, the fullness of time. We're in a full moon now.
Right.
And so, you know, everything that we do is related to earth, moon, sun, and to the planets. When we work with the sun, which is the most yang of mm-hmm. our tools, it mm-hmm. does have that heating quality of the sun. Now, acupuncturists who work with our tools actually would use it instead of mugwort or moxa.
Oh, wow. Too.
On points, they would use it.
Oh, beautiful.
Very bright.
Very bright.
Very warming, very generative.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So I'm amazed by the amount of work that went into developing this. Amazed.
A lot of work.
and the beautiful intricacy.
The other thing we work with it is we work with gems as well. So
oh,
we
okay.
have beautiful quality gemstones that we put on tuning forks as well.
Oh, wow.
And there we're working with, you know, the ohm and then the quality of the gem and how that might be used in the same way that the sound vibrations was a combination of sound and light, really, when you start working with gemstones.
Right. And so how do you, again, match those, or do they? You find that they're sort of better partnerings?
Well, they have different qualities. It depends on what you're
okay,
doing.
Okay, so again,
clinically.
It's another...
So if you're, you know, if you want to soothe or sedate, you would use one type of stone. If you're trying to build energy, you would use a different type of stone.
How wonderful. Yeah. I love how...
So this, you know,
detailed.
And then we also, Donna created a whole essential oils as well, and we use the oils that are in alignment with the planets as well. So again, the sun would be very warming, and but each of the planets is a...
The moon is probably fairly cool and calm and quiet.
Wow. This is one of the forks with a gem on it.
Wow, that's beautiful.
It has a different quality, you know, sort of a different
quality.
Yeah,
it's very different quality.
Yeah.
And so the gem actually contacts the body.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because sound and light have very interesting relationships,
of course.
I'm not really up on the science of, but it's fascinating to use them then mm-hmm. together as...
So that's, you know, that would be working with the gems, with the sound. But, you know, there's a tremendous amount of depth. We have as I mentioned earlier, we have a certification program, and we've been training healthcare providers for we've been around for almost 20 years. So
are there criteria to join your trainings?
What skill set
do you expect?
Well, I mean, we've trained a lot of acupuncturists, massage mm-hmm. therapists, nurses, physicians, physical therapists, occupational therapists, you know, so people from many different backgrounds in healthcare. But we've also just had lay people who are fascinated with sound and really want to learn it at a deeper level. And so a level one of acutonics is open to anyone, you know, to really come
to
study and to learn the work and to experience the work. We're very hands-on in our training. So, you know, in a level one, we're teaching about the science of sound and the ancient history and the cross-cultural use and application across time and all of the indigenous, you know, use of sound.
Right.
And then we teach the basic fundamentals of, you know, how do you work with and use, you know, the introductory tools we talk about in our level one. But we're teaching people points,
right,
meridians, looking at the five elements, you know, theory,
And each course builds on the next course. And so in each level, you're deepening your knowledge. So a large piece of our training is hands-on. And as I said earlier, we don't want people to be armed and dangerous. I mean, this is medicine. These are tools that are used in a clinical and therapeutic setting. Of course, there's techniques people can do for their own self-care. You know, we might work with the Om Unison or work with Mars and Venus and learn basic point protocols to promote health and wellness within ourselves.
Right.
But in terms of, you know, working in a clinical setting and using these tools, you know, whether you're an acupuncturist or a physician or a nurse or whatever your professional training is, you're going to have more tools in your toolkit. You're going to look at how they dovetail into what you already do. But what we hear from our acupuncturists is they're using fewer needles, you know, and they're seeing shifts happen more quickly for people. And at a
different frequency, because if you're doing it, I would be interesting to work with, if you do it in the, and different people, I think, respond at different levels.
Of course.
So for the people who you do it in the energy field as, and then the higher or lower frequencies and how. That's really bad. How you can see how they affect,
You know, in a treatment, it would blend. You know,
would.
You know, we really train people to look at how do you layer sound on a point,
and beautiful,
and how do you use sound and bring sound into the field. So a treatment might, you know, we might begin by working on, for example, kidney one on the ball of the foot. You're gonna, or just around the sole of the foot. So you're gonna start to ground people and to open them up to hearing and feeling the sound, and then you're going to develop a treatment that might be layered. You know, there's certain things you're going to work on. With sound, less is more. I think a lot of times people will over-treat. It's not necessary. If you go back and think about just the human body, our bones, our muscles, our, you know, such high water content, and sound travels 4 times faster in water than in air, so, you know, my mantra in class is less is more.
Right.
Respect the tools. Learn to work with them appropriately. But don't be afraid of them.
Well, and I think it's also really interesting because our body's all connected.
Right.
So just because you're working on one point doesn't mean that it's not, I mean, there's no way it cannot affect the rest of the body.
Well, and
the being.
Right. One of the reasons we like the 8 extraordinary meridians is that the points are on your hands and your feet, but their impact, the vessel travels through the
major
portion of the body. And so when you're working with these primordial vessels, you know, and you're accessing 2 points on the body, you're actually impacting a large part of the body.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
It's often not uncommon, you know, if somebody has pain in this shoulder or just had surgery in this shoulder, you might treat the opposite shoulder. You don't want to work right on the shoulder or somebody's, you know, has a traumatic injury. There are ways to treat it without actually going directly on the injury itself.
Well, thank you so much, Ellen. Do you please give us your website and
how
to find you, and what's the best way to do that?
The best way to find us is our website, which is www.acutonics.com. You can email us at info@acutonics.com.
Wonderful. There's a book on Amazon. I don't know if you want
to... Yeah, we have books available on our work. Acutonics is No Place Like Om is our first book, and Acutonics from Galaxies to Cells, which really gets into the deep archetypes, myths, science behind the planets, and then how we treat therapeutically. And it really explores the vessels on a much deeper level that I've been talking about. So that's our big hardback, full-color book.
So if you're interested in that, and then as you can see or hear, this is an amazing place where people have created bliss not only for themselves but for others. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Thanks for making the journey.
Oh, yeah.